InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Black home ownership rates remain below the national average, despite the Fair Housing Act of the 1960s. Is redlining continuing to shape today's housing market? And if so, what can be done about it? Here with the story, InfoTrack reporter Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Linda Bell, a home equity analyst from Bankrate.com. Ms. Bell, recent data shows the black home ownership rate is only about 46% versus about 65% for the U.S. overall. Do other racial or ethnic minority groups face this kind of disparity?
No, unfortunately, they don't. When you look at all the ethnic groups, black home ownership rate is below all other ethnic groups. The most significant gap is between white households, often with a disparity of 20 to 30%. And this is not something that's new. It's something that has continued on and has been steadily an issue through the years.
And I wanted to ask you about that because I was struck by that number as well. Now, wasn't the Fair Housing Act of 1968 supposed to address this?
It was supposed to address this, but unfortunately, there's a number of issues at play. We're talking about a history of discrimination, some of which was sanctioned by the government, a history of unequal lending practices, also an income gap, which has been pervasive through the years, and add that all together. And even though the Fair Housing Act was supposed to make lending equitable, even though it was supposed to make homeownership accessible to everyone, it has not improved since then, not by any significant measure.
Now, let's talk about the illegal act of redlining. First, briefly, how would you define that?
Redlining started back in the 1930s. It was the Homeowners Loan Corporation, and this was operated by the government. And what they wanted to do was assess the risk of lending in certain areas. And what they did was created these maps. And in these maps, they outlined areas that were less than favorable to lend. And they deemed areas that were green and blue, which had the predominantly white population, those were deemed good areas to lend. And the areas that were outlined in red were areas that had predominantly black households and other minorities as well. And what that did was prevent them from being able to buy homes. Because if these lenders weren't lending and giving mortgages in these areas, then black households and other minorities could not purchase homes. And this is one of the issues that has led to the disparity that we're seeing in homeownership rates still today.
And of course, in addition to the harms that you just mentioned about people not being able to get a loan, what are the broader, perhaps less obvious, but nonetheless certainly real harms to the whole community itself?
Yes, it's not just about black homeownership. When you look at the economy as a whole, if you have any group that's not participating as they should, as it relates to economic growth and opportunity, then it affects the economy as a whole. So it's not just a black homeownership issue, it's an entire American homeownership issue. So we need to make sure that black people are able to purchase homes, not just black people, but Hispanics, Asians, every ethnic group. The American dream, so to speak, is in the ability to purchase a home, because that is the biggest source of wealth that most of us will ever have. And if you can't even purchase a home, if you want to, I'm not saying that you have to purchase a home, but if you want to, you have to be able to do it. And if you don't and have these barriers, then it's something that we definitely need to address.
Is redlining a thing of the past, or does it exist today, perhaps in more subtle forms?
Yes, it definitely does exist in more subtle terms. As we talked about earlier, the Fair Housing Act was supposed to make things like this illegal, but you do see it even after black people purchase homes. You are seeing it in terms of the appraisal gap. And that is shown that homes that are in these formerly redlined areas actually show that they are valued less than other homes. And it's not even accounting for the normal things that people use to assess values of home. It just shows that these homes are valued at less. So while it doesn't exist in these overt forms, it's definitely still existing today.
We're visiting with Linda Bell, a home equity analyst from Bankrate.com, concerning barriers to Black Americans buying homes. To help level the playing field, explain for us the special purpose credit programs and how they work.
The special credit purpose programs are designed to assist people to be able to purchase homes that maybe are credit challenged. Now, research does show that even though credit scores can be lower under Black individuals and other groups, and if you open up the door to them to purchase homes with maybe not having to have the credit score, maybe you look at their rent background and other things as it relates to that, then maybe that home ownership can be open to them. Because right now, our economy, as you know, it's geared by being able to purchase a home and looking at somebody's credit score. But perhaps you can look at their rent background and their on-time payment histories as it relates to utilities and other bills. So there's other ways that potentially can open the door for homeownership, and we just need to be able to look at those ways to help Black people to be able to purchase homes.
Now, you alluded before to the idea of government-sponsored practices that are actually harmful to Black Americans seeking to buy a home. So how could, for example, changing zoning laws make a difference?
Well, we currently have laws across the country, like local governments, and they create barriers to build low-cost housing. So we have specific zoning that says, well, you can't build a low-cost home in this. You can't build maybe a townhouse or an apartment complex, which could potentially open the doors for people to be able to not just own homes, but to also be able to rent. So a lot of this has to do with legislation, and the building process has gotten costlier and cumbersome. And, you know, there's been more states. It's been kind of promising that more states are greenlighting housing construction decisions that are usually regulated to municipalities. But, you know, we really need to see action on this in terms of the local front to see something on a more grander scale nationally.
And what about community land trusts? How do these work to help people buy homes?
Community land trusts are certainly a big part of this, and it has a lot to do with communities getting together and saying, hey, we have a problem here. We need to do this in order to solve the homelessness problem. A lot of cities have successfully reduced things like homelessness by stepping up housing construction. We've seen the conversion of vacant buildings into residents. A lot of things are happening community-wise that can really create promising outlook in terms of as it relates for home ownership. But as I mentioned earlier, it's really about starting small, and maybe then we can kind of see things operate on a grander scale and boost home ownership nationwide.
Now, Linda, correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the model, the community land trust, where people could buy a house, but not necessarily the land that it sits on, thereby making the transaction more affordable?
Yes. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that when you think about when you buy a home, there is so much value in the land and less value in the house on top of it, which is really surprising when I first learned about this. So when you actually separate the land from the home, that can actually make homeownership more affordable by being able to purchase the land, and then construction can happen after and things like that. So that's one thing that certain municipalities and places across the country have examined in terms of making housing more affordable, because home prices are at a record high. We have mortgage rates, which are still stubbornly high. And a lot of this is the issue as well, not just for Black homeowners, but just homeowners in general for being able to break into home ownership. And the community land trusts are just one of the solutions that could potentially open the door.
It's quite a multi-layered problem, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely it is.
Linda Bell with Bankrate.com. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, seniors working in their 60s enjoy many benefits. That story, straight ahead.
You're listening to InfoTrack. More after this.